Tony C.
My name is Tony, and I'm an addict. Welcome to CPR CNA 24. Gail, are you ready to rock? We came all the way this weekend to get recovery, to hear addicts share their experience, strength, and hope. Well, we ain't had nowhere to go. I had less than 90 days, and they were talking about coming to this convention, Ocean City, weeks and weeks and weeks. They were saying, I can't wait to see this person. I can't wait to see that person. I had 90 days. It was raining. It was cold as hell. I couldn't understand. Who goes to the beach in the wintertime? My sponsor gave me $40. I bought a $17 Wilson sweatsuit. I bought about a $9 pair of Reeboks. I had an outfit. They say we're going to love you till you learn how to love yourself. They picked me up that morning. I came out. I had the sweatsuit, and I had one pair of jeans and another top. They looked at me. They said, damn, she ain't even got a suitcase. But that was okay. I got down here, and I never seen so many people. Never seen so many people, addicts and stuff, coming here, you know, trying to get a message of hope. They have saved all year long and stuff. This is like vacation. This is a time to get restored, rejuvenated. This is time to hit a message how we survive in this program. I want to thank the Montgomery area. I want to thank them. They have been so nice to me. So nice to me. And I'm so grateful. And I'm really so humble. This is like something that I can never imagine. You know, this is something I could never imagine even being in a room, even being up here. I come from an area, from a region and stuff where it's a lot of clean time. It's a lot of clean time, and it's a lot of addicts, and we do this thing. We be rocking and rolling. They came for us this year. The theme is more living than surviving. They saying, Tony, what is you doing? What is you doing with your life? Baby, they call me. Let me finish with that other story. God, I am so nervous. I am so nervous. This is my first time, y'all. And this is all I'm trying to do is just tell my story. And hopefully I can help just one person. But I'm going to be me. And I'm going to expect y'all to love me like you've done all this time. You know, so I got in here. And they did the banner presentation. And they were saying, shh, shh, shh. Be quiet. I was asking all these questions. They just said, just sit down. Be quiet. And they did it. And they had that wonderful woman's voice and stuff just explaining all the banners. And I sat there and I listened to the speaker. And when they introduced the speaker, I was like, who? Good God. How do you get to be one of them? Oh, my God. But I'm telling you, I am not the prophet or the prophetess of NA. I can only tell you how I have worked the steps of this program and how it applies to my life. The steps and stuff that has helped me save my life, because I came from nowhere, from nothing, from the gutters of DC. I never thought in a million years that another addict could help me. I thought I was so far gone that I was beyond help, beyond reach, until I came into this program and y'all have loved me. You know, I came from a good family, for real. I know now I can't blame my mother and father for a lot of things and stuff that happened to me, but because they wanted the best for me. You know, they put me through the best schools. You know, I went to Catholic school, and it was a whole lot of going on, genuflecting and all that kind of stuff. But they did the best for me, you know, and it was really, really important back then, because I came from an era where it was like March on Washington and Martin Luther King, and you know, it's very important and stuff as an African American to have civil rights and human rights, and my family has struggled for so long and stuff just trying to do the best for us. You know, my father worked for the Senate. He opened doors and stuff for congressmen. My mother worked at the Navy Yard in the daytime, and she did catering business. She worked for a catering service, and you know, we ate a lot of food and stuff that came off of other people's plates. And they did the best that they could for me as a child. You know, my mother, I remember sitting with my mother one night, and I was sitting on the side of her bed, and she had her brassiere on, and she had safety pins in her brassiere. And I was like, "Ma, why you have safety pins in your brassiere?" And she said, "Baby, as long as you have clean clothes on you, don't you ever ask me that." You know, so they did the best they could for me. My father was a man from Southern Maryland, and very strong man, and very determined, and, you know, it was no nonsense and stuff in our family. So, of course, I did a lot of things. I was the youngest of four, and I can remember growing up, and we had our chores and stuff to do in the mornings, and my mother would be cooking breakfast on Saturdays, and she would start off, and I could hear, I'm so in love with you, whatever you wanna do is all right with me. She must have had that album for about 5 years. And my sister, that was our cue. That was our cue to, like, get in line. You got to do your chores and everything. And my sisters would be grumbling and everything. And, you know, and I would be saying, because they knew they had to iron and wash. And I only had, like, two chores. All I had to do was sweep and clean up and everything. So I would run downstairs and get my breakfast. And my mother would say, "Where's your sisters?" And I'd say, "Ma, they upstairs cussing." So when they would come downstairs, they would be rolling their eyes and stuff at me, you know, but that was family, you know, but it was so much expectation. My parents wanted me to be the best and do the best. They had worked real hard and stuff to put us in school. And the thing about it is that growing up was real difficult for me, because I wasn't like a lot of children, and I always felt and stuff that I wasn't meeting up to my expectations, especially from my father. You know, he would buy me for Christmas and stuff, I would get like trains and, you know, like footballs and shit. I wanted doll babies. So I got beat a lot of times and stuff for combing the hair out my sister's doll babies. And I can remember being so mad, that I set Bobby on fire. My father beat the skin off of me. You know, and that's all I wanted. You know, all I think that I wanted and a lot of us want is love. And but it was real difficult, you know, because during that time and stuff, we never said like love in the house and stuff. And I wanted my, I remember those arguments and stuff when my mother and father would be fighting and the abuse in the house on the inside. You know, on the inside, all hell was breaking loose, but on the outside, we had to march in line. You know, I came from a family and stuff that they gave looks. You know what I'm saying? They gave looks because it was through that experience of those looks that we knew to stand straight. You know, when they was beating us in the house, we had to stand straight. You know, my father would give me that look. Oh, I knew better not to say nothing. You know, today and stuff, the kids, oh, baby, it's a whole, that's a whole nother story. You know, but we ain't do, that wasn't happening in our house. That wasn't happening in our house. You know, I really thought my father didn't love me. And a lot of this, you know, I had asked my mother one time, you know, we had gotten to a big argument at home. And I said, I know that's not my father. It can't be my father. And she said, baby, yeah, that's your father. You know, so I wanted a lot of love and stuff from him. He did a lot of things that was really, really confusing for me. You know, he went, you know, it was Muhammad Ali was fighting at the Armory one year, and his friend didn't go with him. And I wanted that attention from my father so much. And when his friend wouldn't go with him, he said, come on, I'm going to take you to the fight. And when we got into the Armory, I was so excited that my father was finally doing something with me. That when we got in there, and I think it was like as soon as we sat down and they rang the bell, Muhammad Ali knocked the man out. My father looked at me and said, you bad luck, MF. And I said, I can't do nothing right. You know, he bought me 2 pet rabbits when I was young. He built the cages and stuff for me. He showed me how to feed them carrots and lettuce and to take care of them. I took them to the school because they had a pet show and everybody had bought their cats and their dogs and everything. So I took my little pet rabbits to the pet show. And they won the blue ribbon and I came home so excited. And I put them back in the cage and I went to play. And when I came back, and I came through, and I looked, and the cage was open, and I was looking all over the yard for my rabbits, and they was gone. And I remember rushing into the kitchen, and my mother was in there, and she was cooking with that cast iron skillet, and I saw the gravy just popping. And I looked at my mother, and I said, Ma, my rabbits is gone. My rabbits is gone. And she looked at my father. She said, you better tell that child what you did to them rabbits. And he looked at me, and he said, what the hell you think I was feeding them all my goddamn carrots and lettuce for? Sit your ass over there and eat some of this good old rabbit. My sister was real mean, you know, because I used to feed them out of this wooden bowl. And when my father made me sit in that chair, she stuck that bowl on the plate and looked at me and started laughing. You know, I couldn't eat my poor rabbits. I just couldn't eat my poor rabbits. But it was so much abuse, and when I was growing up and stuff, I was getting so confused because it was so many expectations that my family had from me. You know, by being the youngest, it was really hard. Even going to school, my sister was real smart. And I would come right after her, and the nuns would say, what's wrong with you? Your sister was smart. You dumb as hell. You know, so I always had to prove myself. You know, I always felt unworthy a lot of times. My mother and father were like fighting, and every time that I would do something, he would start beating on her. And I left home, and I left school, and I went uptown. And back then in D.C., 14th Street was very different. It was a lot of lights and a lot of cars, and it was like a lot of long Cadillacs And it was prostitutes and stuff from all over. You know, D.C. is different there. They sit outside and eat. That kind of stuff blows me away. They sit outside there and eat. Baby, when you saw somebody on 14th Street back then, they was running, their pants, pulling their pants up, all kind of stuff was going on. Keep up with me, Gail. Pulling your pants up, and all kind of stuff was going on. She gonna make that money this weekend. She gonna make that money this weekend. So I got into, I was going out, and I went to this club, and I seen these women behind the bars. They was pretty. They had on nice coats with fur collars and all kinds of stuff. And I'd just be watching them. And they would smoke their cigarettes, and then they would leave out, and they would come back in, and they throw the money up on the bar. And I was like, wow. You know, I ain't want to be no damn lawyer, no doctor, or nothing like that. I wanted an easy life. I was watching a lot of TV back then. I wanted to be the Mayfair Madam or some damn body. I got caught up with them, and my goal back then was to have a rabbit coat. All I wanted was a rabbit coat. So I watched them. I started going out on the corners. They would say, stand here on the end of the corner. I was young. I wasn't real beat up back then. They would get in the cars. They would say, pull them over. Get in. You sit in the middle. I sit in the middle. They would start talking. They start talking about doing Tahitian tongue baths and African head rolls. And the dates would be like, wow. What the hell is a Tahitian tongue bath and an African head roll? But we said what we needed to say to get that thing. I had to learn fast with that crowd. Before I knew it, I was snorting dope, and we had started, I was using, and I was off to the races. I made some money, got that rabbit coat, and the disease just took over. By that time, the pellets was falling off the coat. The pockets was pinned up. I had a half a hammer in one pocket and my tools in the other. The disease had taken over, and I went from Catholic school to the rat in the alley. So I had to leave. I had to learn real fast. And before I knew it, I was on the corners, and I was saying all kinds of things. By that time, when I had gotten so broke down and was using so much and stuff, I couldn't get a trick. So it was no sense in standing on the corner no more. So I would just walk out in the middle of the street and just wave the cars down and say, please give me a ride. I say, baby, I don't want nothing. Don't give me no money. Just give me a ride. But when I got in there, I had that half a hammer. And I put that half a hammer to work. Because it was calling me. The disease was calling me. I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop. When they locked me up, when the police said, you are under arrest, I was like, thank you. I'm hungry. I just want to lay down. I would go to jail and get out and do the same thing over and over again. You know, my mother, I would always tell my mother where I was at, and we were staying up in a tourist home up on Clifton Street, and it was like six of us, and we slept in shifts. You know, if I was hustling in the daytime, somebody else would be asleep at night. If I was hustling in the nighttime, somebody else would be asleep in the daytime. Sometimes it was 2 and 3 days at a time, a week at a time. In the beginning, I had to cute little days of the week draws, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. In the beginning, I used to keep them in order. But at the end, it'd be Monday, Sunday, and some more shit. And they was all just standing up on their own. You know, I went to a hotel downtown. It was in the daytime, and it was 95 degrees. And this Indian man picked me up with a big old turban on his head, and I went into the hotel room with him. And he said, before we get started, you gotta rub yourself down in this oil. So while he was rubbing me down in the oil, I was trying to find out where the wallet was. Because you know that wasn't enough, whatever he gave me. The disease said, take it all. He got to go, take it all. So he put all that damn olive oil all on me. And I sent that fool to the bathroom to take a shower. And I just remember just running through the hallways of the hotel trying to put my clothes up underneath all that olive oil. I jumped in the cab. The cab driver said, what's wrong with you? I said, just take me uptown, 14th and W. By that time, my girlfriends, the girls I was hanging out with, their names was like Itchy and Sweet Thing, Fast Pat. You know, it's Old Man Blue, Matterack, Rough House McGill, and the White Law. Yeah. The Thacker Brothers. They sold us dope, and all you did was put your money in the bucket. They lift the bucket up, you sit on the step, the dope was in the toilet paper. I didn't know what the hell I was shooting. All I know, I had to have it. Baby, by that time, my feet was all swollen. My hands were swollen. My friend was hitting, I was shooting dope all in my forehead. And I could remember it was just like frizzing. I was getting high and it was just like, my hair was like frizzing. It was burning out all my damn brain cells. You know, so it was Thanksgiving, and I hadn't caught a trick. Actually, I was down on 14th and K that morning, and I just couldn't catch a trick. I was standing there, and I had messed with the Washington Post men so much, and they wouldn't pull over with me. And that morning, he had hit me so hard in my head that I had fell back into the bushes. And I just walked back uptown. I said, oh my God, I can't take no more of this. And it was Thanksgiving, and I just couldn't go home. And they was feeding in Martha's table on 14th Street. And I was so embarrassed and stinking, just stinking so bad, I couldn't go home. I couldn't let my parents and stuff see what had happened to their child. And I kept looking up to the sky going, God, help me. God, help me. I didn't know about more living than survival. I didn't know about this program of Narcotics Anonymous. I was getting so high, and so often, I didn't even know who the damn president was. You forget about all those things when you caught up. It's no way out. I just needed to do what I had to do just to get over. I was taking so much stuff, hair on, drinking, smoking marijuana. The dates was giving me all kind of psychedelic stuff. I was a mess. You know, it was a time and stuff when, like Thanksgiving, I couldn't go home and it was Mother's Day. And my mother would call me at nighttime. It would be like 10 o'clock at night. And they had a commercial on TV. Do you know where your child is? And she would call me and she would say, "Baby, are you all right?" And I say, "Ma, yeah, I'm all right." She said, "Please come home." And I said, "Ma, I just can't come home. I just can't come home." So it was Mother's Day. And I wanted so bad to go home to see my mother. And I couldn't go see my mother. And it was this lady who ran an oil joint. Her name was Miss Minnie. And she was my mother. And she ran the oil joint. So I went in CVS and stole a box of candy in the car. And I took it up there to her. And I said, "Ma, I can't go home to my real mother. You my mother today." She said, "Thank you, baby. And when you go upstairs, don't make no whole lot of goddamn noise and stuff. Hurry up and take your ass out of here." You know, I would go to the oil joints and I would have to disguise my voice. Because once I used to get in there, I wouldn't go out. And I would mess with all the other dope fiends in there and I'd start singing. And they would say, "Get that bitch, get her out of here. We trying to nod, get her out of here." No doors was never open to me. Just the doors of Narcotics Anonymous. I had a girlfriend in this program. I couldn't understand why, you know, she stopped tricking and got off the corners. She went to beauty school. And I remember one day while I was going out and she was walking down 14th Street and I stopped her. And I said, "Tina, where you going?" And she said, "Just come go with me. I'm going to this meeting." And I said, "Girl, I got $20. What the hell has happened to you?" And she said, "Just go with me to this meeting." And by that time, I had been on all the methadone programs in D.C. on the highest dosage, and I just couldn't stay clean. I just still wanted to get high. And I went to that meeting with her. It was on top of 14th and Q. And it was all these addicts in there. And I was like, "Oh, I know him. What the hell is she doing up in here?" And they was like smiling. And I said, "God damn, a whole room full of losers. They gotta be hot. The police done ran everybody up in here." I looked at her. I said, "Girl, what has happened to you? You need to get yourself together. I got $20. And I said, "The both of us together, we can make some money this morning." She said, "Shoot, stop, be quiet. You're making too much noise." I was like, "Let's get the hell up out of here, all these losers up in here and stuff." So she stayed. And I left out. And I can remember when I was walking down 14th Street, because I was on my mission then. I had $20. I had to get the other 20 together. I had to get it all. And I was on my way down, and it was some more y'all on the corner down there on Rhode Island Avenue. It was William H. and Mika and Dominique and Thurman H. And they were saying, "Miss Tony," you know William H. had that old deep, rusky voice, "Miss Tony, when you gonna get your act together?" I said, "If you won't get out the hell out of my face with that old nonsense, that old Narcotics Anonymous, look at y'all. I got some stuff to do. I'm getting high as hell." They just shook their head and I went on and I did my thing. But I watched my girlfriend for 10 years. She came down on the corners and would see me standing out there. And it wasn't so much of her talking about what she was doing with her life. It was what I could see that was happening to her life. I have to see in order to believe. Her life was changing, and she was just like me. And it just started coming in. And I remember like 10 years had gone past, and she was still riding, y'all. And she would say, "Baby, just come on." And I said, "Tina, I can't. It ain't gonna work for me. It's just not gonna work for me." And she caught me in the club one night. And I was sitting there and I was trying to just drink away stuff and just trying to like not think about what had happened to me. And I could see her walking up behind me in the mirror. And she had all them old NA people with her. And she said, "Baby, please, you look a mess." And you know, I didn't think I looked that bad. And she just kept saying, "Baby, please, just come on, go with me, you can live with me." And I said, "I can't." And then all of a sudden I looked at her and I said, "You can help everybody else. When are you gonna help me?" And she said, "Okay, you meet me in the morning and we go into a meeting." So that was like Friday night. And of course the next night was Saturday. So you know that thought went in one ear and out the other. But when I finally got there, she was there for me. And I remember she said, "We're going to New York and I want you to ride with me." And she said, "Baby, just come up here because I need to do your hair because your hair is raggedy. You need a perm and I need to fix you up before we get on this highway." So I was like, "Okay, I can go up here and listen to her talk that old NA mess to me and at least I'll have a hairdo out of this." So we got in the van. It was a white van. I like to call it the retarded van. I was still high from the night before, and I sat in the back and in the corner, and they sat me next to this Indian guy who was talking about how he was smoking crack with an umbrella in his bathroom. And I was saying to myself, "Oh my God, what the hell is going on here? These are some sick people." They had the gospel music going. So I put on my earphones, because you know I was listening to all that old crazy stuff. And they was just a smiling. And we got on 95 North. And I kept saying, "Hey, y'all need to pull over to a liquor store. I need something. I ain't had a damn thing." And they just kept moving and smiling and moving. And they ain't let me out that van until we got to New York City. And I know they had to go to the bathroom. And I know they was hungry. But they knew once I got out that goddamn van, no telling what would have happened. And today I know that was God working in my life. In the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And the reason why I'm trying to take my time with my story, because I know it's some new people in here that need to know how this program works. And if they don't believe right now, it's okay. Just sit still, hold on, because we're going to love you. We're going to love you till you learn how to love yourself. A lot of things was cloudy and foggy to me in the beginning, and I didn't believe in a lot of stuff. But today I believe. So we got to New York, and it was like a marathon going on at St. Mark's or St. Veronica's. And she was speaking. And I went down in there, and the addicts were smiling again. The guy hugged me, and she introduced me to him, and he looked at me and he said, "Welcome in out of the rain." I said, they really crazy. It ain't even raining outside. You know, a lot of times, I don't get it right off, y'all. It took a lot of years to get it. So she shared, and she told her story. And when she told her story, I could see it. I had lived through a lot of her experience with her. That was my shot of hope. She included me in a whole lot of stuff. And I was really mad. I said, she's telling all my business and including me and stuff too. She need to mind her business and just talk about her. But I could never forget the love and the hugs in this program. It wasn't easy in the beginning. I came home after that trip. I threw away my drugs. She said, baby, we're gonna do 90 meetings in 90 days. And I'm the but and the and, you know, but what if I miss one day? She said, you start over. Suppose I get sick, you start over. You know, I promised the area I wasn't gonna cuss a lot, but it's really, really difficult for me not to cuss and be myself. So she said, bitch, you gonna use if you don't go no meetings and do 90 in 90 days. She did hair. So in her business and stuff, she was like doing hair when I needed to be in meetings. So I would call her and she said, meet me at this place. It's a meeting going on. I'ma pick you up, don't worry about nothing. And I was walking in, you know, in the cold. So when they talk about how bad do you want this thing, you're gonna walk through some blizzards in here in order to get better. So I would go to the meetings and she would say, sit up front. And it was real difficult sitting up front because I felt so bad and so ashamed. But they kept smiling and saying, it's okay. You're gonna be all right. And I couldn't sit still. And I love coffee. You know, I had to have coffee. And it was cold back there. So I needed that cup of coffee. And they kept saying, if you wanna sit your ass down after you get that last cup of coffee, sit down. Learn to listen. Listen to learn. I said, oh, they so mean up in here. And I kept looking for my sponsor. But while I was sitting there looking, the speaker was sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And I was like, God damn, they tell everything up in here. They don't have no shame. But I loved it. I just was loving it because that's how I started connecting. And that's how I started feeling better about myself. So a lot of nights and stuff, she didn't meet me at the meeting. But somebody will walk up to me and say, your sponsor told me to take you home. And when I got in the car, they would already have their orders. Take her home. Tell her to call me soon as she get home. And I would call my sponsor. And then I was saying, you ain't come to the meeting. She said, that's all right, baby, but you home. And back then, I had a problem late at night, because late at night was my activities. That's when it was right for me late at night. You know, and it was still so hard for me because the urge was still, the street was still calling me. Even in going to meetings and hearing people share and y'all telling me that it's going to get better, the street was still calling me. So I had this guy, and he worked the graveyard shift. And he said, you call me every night at 11:30, and I would call him. And he would be reading out of his journal. And he'd be reading me all these old stories and stuff. It'd be 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I would be still holding the phone. And then that went on for a long time. And I said, I'm sick of you talking about yourself all night long on the damn phone. He said, you ain't got no friends. You need to be grateful for anything somebody want to stay up all night with your sick, crazy ass so you won't use. I'm saving your life. And I am so grateful for him to this day. So back then, my sponsor was doing a lot of meetings. And she took us everywhere. New York, Durham, Boston, California, all over. And we just traveled. And I started like feeling a part of a program, feeling a part of a group of people just like me, feeling a part that I someday I can get better too. And I kept meeting all these people all over, and they was just sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And I remember she was getting real sick. And back then, I was able to share things with her that I couldn't even tell my family at home. And she would just listen to me. And she would just say, baby, it's gonna be okay. She stayed on the phone with me a lot of nights when I was going through it. And I kept saying, Tina, I can't do this. I'm a use. I just can't do this. And she said, baby, I'm coming to get you. And she would get up at 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock, no matter whenever I needed her. And she would come and get me and just take me to her house where I was safe, where I didn't have to use no more. I loved my first sponsor. She was everything to me. It was very black and white in the beginning. It was no nonsense. You going to meetings and you going to stay clean. The best part of our relationship, because I couldn't get away with nothing, she knew me. I couldn't just tell her anything. She was like, get to the exact nature. How do you feel? She said, you can waste my time if you want to talking about the weather. How your goddamn ass feel? And she was taking me all these places, and I didn't have a whole lot in the beginning. But I saw that y'all wore a lot of gold and dressed real nice. And I said, I'm gonna get it together, and I'm gonna show them I'm gonna recover just like they are too. And she was taking me to all these places, and I remember she got real, real sick. And she had to share in San Francisco. And when we all flew out that morning, and she had been real sick so much that it had gotten, like, I wasn't even thinking about how really sick she was. And I kept saying, are you okay? And she said, yeah, baby, I'm okay. We're gonna be all right. I just gotta get out of here, because I got this commitment and I need to, they expected me to come and share. And we caught the plane to San Francisco as a whole group of us. And my sponsor was the Friday night speaker. And I remember sitting on the front, and I was so proud of her. And I was so glad that she had included me in her life. I never thought that she was going to die in San Francisco after she shared. But she shared, delivering the message of hope and sharing her experience, strength, and hope. And that was the last thing she said to the newcomer. Welcome. You don't never have to use again. You don't never, ever have to use again. And I can remember taking that long flight home, because that was like one of the longest flights. And I was like, God, what's going to happen? But before I got home, before I got on that plane, I went to see her in ICU. And I think this played a real important part in my recovery. And I looked down on her, and she had the look on her face like, baby, it's all right. it's all over, and you need to do what you need to do. And I still kept that, and I held on to that. And when I came home, they just was there at the airport, and they just surrounded us and hugged us, and they told all of us that it was going to be okay. So this is when I really had to stay to my program and start going to meetings. It was real difficult in the beginning trying to find another sponsor, because you know I thought I was special. I had the sponsor that was everything to me, the mother, the father, the sister, the brother. She just knew everything. Who was qualified in Narcotics Anonymous? I ain't had no sponsor for a while. They say, Tony, who's sponsoring you? Jesus sponsored me. Mind your business. Keep the focus on yourself. I was out of my mind. By this time, I was going to enough meetings. And it's one thing about going to, like, meetings and stuff, you can hear people share. And if you listen close enough, you're able to, like, remember what they say, so you can go to another meeting across town and wave your hand and share the same thing. Like I done worked on something. I can share the same thing. And I did that for a long time. And I started dressing up the outside because I didn't want to deal with the inside. I started dressing it up so you could think that I was recovering. But all along, I was just dressing up the outside and my insides was just dirty. I wasn't investing in the program. They say this is a textbook, a book that will help you, guide you through your recovery process. I just thought it was about just dressing up. So I bought a lot of designer stuff because it was real important for me to sit in a meeting and have Francis W. say, girl, them some bad shoes. I had every hairstyle it was. My hairdresser looked at me one day. I said, girl, you got to come up with something different, something they ain't never seen. She said, I am a hairdresser. I am not a magician. They have this meeting over at Howard on Sundays. And my girlfriend was chairing the meeting, Lil Francis. I seen her earlier. And by that time, I had got a couple of outfits. I had a brand new jean suit. So the meeting was packed and I was going in there and I had timed it just right about 5 minutes before the meeting. By this time, I knew half of D.C., so I strolled down and gave the N.A. wave. How you doing this morning? Good to see you. And I walked all the way to the front and sat on the front row. And it was a step meeting, and the speaker hadn't showed up. So Frances gave me her hug and said, hi, baby, how you doing? And I'm sitting there like waving, hi, y'all, good morning, hi. So she pointed to me and said, I need you to do the 12th step for me. So I said, I haven't worked the 12th step. She said, what? I haven't worked the 12th step. She said, you've been in this program all this time, you ain't did no step work, what is wrong with you? And I could feel myself just sinking down and down and down and down. So it's something about ego and image. When it comes at you full force, it will break you down. So after the shame, I put my little head down and you know, it wasn't real important no more about the waves and the how you doing, because she had set me straight. But it got me thinking about why was I in this program. I kept saying to myself, why am I in so much pain? The shopping wasn't helping me. The eating wasn't helping me. The hairstyles wasn't helping me. So I had a friend who is my sponsor today, Roger C. And he came to my anniversary. And I asked him from the podium to be my sponsor. So that was, you can tell me no if you want to, but you gotta explain it to all of them. So he started sponsoring me. But what was appealing to me by this time was the commitment to the program and working the steps because I wanted to get better. So he put me on a regimen. We're gonna do steps and we're gonna do traditions. And it was a time frame. Now, I'm not telling y'all about how to sponsor your sponsees. I'm not telling y'all which way is right and which way is wrong. I'm telling y'all what worked for me in order to get better in this process. And I started going into the It Works How and Why and into the study guide. And a question would be like, how were you when you used? And I answered a question. The second question was, how is it right now? Why you just wrote that first question? And I'd answer that. And then it seemed like the third question was, now tell me really how you really feel about. And I'd be like, God damn, I just answered that question. That book is powerful. You're going to get clean. You're going to come clean up in this program. More living than surviving. Yes. So we started working steps. And I started going inside. And I started really dealing with this process of Narcotics Anonymous and the whole recovery process, where I started learning things about myself, from the powerlessness to the unmanageability, through the insanity, finding a God of my understanding, working the sixth step and doing the character defects. You know, it's a lot of character defects, and a lot of times and stuff early on, I was like answering the questions going, it does not apply to me. I'm sick. Retarded. Humility. The writing of amends. The making of amends. My 10th step at night. Going over that day. Thinking about what is really going on with you. How can I get better? You need to change. You need to change. I had so much problems with my 11th step with prayer and meditation. And I kept saying, I'm not getting this, Roger. He said, just keep on. Just keep writing. Just keep on. And I started writing, and I remember when it was New Year's, and you know, I had stopped asking for a whole lot of stuff. You know, it took me a while and stuff to really find out that, you know, I was just asking for hamburgers and God was ready to give me a steak. I was just like asking for all those things and he was like giving me so many opportunities. And I said, God, just get me out of this just one time. I won't do it no more. As soon as I get out of it, the same thing. I would do the same thing again. So he's been teaching me a lot. And I was working on steps, and I had started getting to a spot in my life where I was getting real comfortable. I started feeling good about myself. And I said, oh, hell, I'm working steps. I got a job. I got a car. I'm going to meetings. I got a home group. I got sponsees. I'm helping them. I said, I'm working on my house. I refinanced. I'm all in Lowe's and Home Depot buying all kind of stuff to fix my house up because I want my friends to come and cook food because you know I can't cook. So I needed to have ovens and stuff so we can have some fun. So early on in recovery, I wanted to get clean. I wanted to live a good life. And I wanted that husband, that man. So it was Memorial Day weekend, and it was men's wrap. They was having a marathon. And I was sitting in there with my sponsor, and crack walked right in the door. It was in a white wife beater, some jeans. The arms was glistening. It was like he was right off that Bowflex commercial. So some say, you got to keep your cool. Don't let him know you liking what you see. And he came in there, and my sponsor was looking at me. He said, what is going on with you? I was like, Lord, have mercy. So he came over, and my sponsor hugged him and said, how you doing, young man? It's a good day today. Meet my sponsee right here. And I stood up and he hugged me. And he said, damn, you smell good. And I was like, oh my God. So it ended up, I gave him my phone number. He gave me his phone number. I had my Narcotics Anonymous man. I said, I'm going to do this different. I'm just not going to have sex right off. I've been through that. I'm working on something now. I've been through all that pain. So we start going out for lunch and after work and watching the airplanes come in on the blankets eating Popeye's chicken. My man was calling me in the morning. He said, I just got finished reading the Bible. Now we're going to read just for today together. So I said, oh my God, I got a godly man and a program man. What difference did it make? I had 13 years, he had a year. Oh, don't act like y'all don't understand. 14 divided by 2 is 7. I thought that my 13 years was going to make him have 7 years. He was going to understand the whole process. We was going to live happily ever after. I was dating. I had started off with the white rose at first, graduated to the yellow rose. It went to the pink rose a few weeks after that. I still hadn't had no sex. It went to the red rose. By that time, I was in love. We was talking, it was all during the election time with Obama and Hillary. Me and him was on the phone talking about steps in the program. Him with his 1 year and me with my 13, 7 and 7. He was smart. I could talk about Hillary. He could talk about Obama. We doing this thing. He telling me he want to be a motivational speaker like Les Brown. We going places. My dream. He had just got out of jail. My sponsor telling me, what else you think they do in jail besides read and lift weights? I'm not listening to my sponsor because now he's jealous. Try to get your own relationship. I ain't working no more steps because I'm recovered. I got a husband. The white picket fence is here for me. Y'all told me I could have anything I wanted. A castle or a hut. I'm trying to get that castle. Y'all told me I could have it. So I'm listening to him. And I really want to get out of this. But before it was all over, I wasn't getting the kind of attention and stuff that I wanted. He was going to school. It was like one class and two class. Then all of a sudden, he got another class. And I'm like, where's my time? And I had lost myself. And when it hit me that things weren't going to work out between us, I couldn't accept it. One more time, I felt like that addict who wasn't worthy anymore. One more time, I realized that I wasn't loving myself the way I should be loving myself. And I had to go back to the steps again. You know, and we just broke up. We broke up with him telling me he was going to beat my ass from my front door to the White House, and that was it. So, to bring it up to date, it was New Year's, and I asked God to take my will, to really take my will. And all through my process, in order for me to get this, I have to believe in this program. I have to believe I'm going to get better. And I watch other addicts in here. And I watch people change and how they become better human beings in this program, just not using one day at a time. And I can remember watching this brother, and he was sharing about his connection with his higher power and with God. And I was saying to myself, I wish I could just get there. And he had went to another institution and stuff and got more help in his recovery process and with how he felt about his spiritual condition and stuff with his higher power. And I admire him so much to this day because he caught a lot of backlash and stuff for people in this program that were saying, like, mean things. And it's sometimes when we start getting better, we may be the only ones and stuff standing, and we be standing alone sometimes. And I know this is a loving and caring program, and we need to allow each other and stuff to go through our own process. You know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. You know, this has been really, really difficult for me because when I asked God to take my will, it was certain things. It came under conditions. It came about change. And he started taking things away from me, things that I thought meant so much to me. And all he was telling me, if you want to get better, then you're going to have to trust in me, totally trust in me. So he started taking things away from me, like my car. I was riding to Wilmington, Delaware with my girlfriend, Michelle. And my car damn near seemed like it caught on fire. And I was stranded, and Sheila had to come get us at a Wawa. And take me to the convention. And we had a blizzard. This was all like right after the blizzard. And during the blizzard and stuff, a tree had fell all down and missed my house, missed my car, missed everything, hit the man across the street car. I wanted to run because I'm not good at those kind of things. I run. And we went to Molina to the convention. And what a powerful convention that was for me. You know, I listened to a lot of people and stuff share, and I remember this guy was sharing about that conventions are not recovery. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? This is where it all happens. This is a meeting, any meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, where some addict may stay clean, is hope for another addict. We had this blizzard in D.C., and all the meetings had shut down. So we was texting each other, and we got on a conference call. We was on a conference call. It was hundreds of addicts on a conference call, trying to stay clean through the blizzard. I'm over my girlfriend's house, laid across the bed. It sounded like we was at the Giant Food Store. Something was like ding, 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 ding. I said, what the hell is going on? But it was us trying to stay clean through the blizzard. Through the blizzard. I don't ever want to use again. I don't ever want to use again. You know, this is the weekend where, you know, I love Ocean City. My thing is to come here, see all my friends, people that don't live in D.C., you know, this may be the only opportunity through the year and stuff. I get a chance to hug them, tell them how much I love them. I get a chance to go through registration, ask the committee, do they have a job and all that kind of stuff. Go in there to the Intergent line and stuff and holler about where my dough roller tickets and hide behind the newcomer. I like to have fun in this program. You know, I guess the most powerful thing, or I guess the only thing that I can say to the new baby, that just give yourself a chance. We live in this program. You know I haven't shared a lot tonight. I just hope that I've helped just one person. I've seen the lineup of the speakers. We got a dynamite main speaker tomorrow night that's gonna share his experience and strength and hope. We got a dynamite speaker for Sunday morning and dynamite workshops and speakers who can clean up all the mess I done made tonight. And I know I'm gonna leave here tonight and I'm gonna love y'all and hope you will love me. And I'm gonna do this thing and continue to stay clean. And I love you all, and thank you for letting me share.